This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Zona Plus, an effective non-drug treatment for high blood pressure. I use it with my patients at the Hoffman Center all the time. As a listener to Intelligent Medicine, the company is offering you special savings of $50 and free shipping. To find out more, go to TryZonaNow.com or call toll-free 1-866-669-9662. Be sure to mention Dr. Hoffman to get your $50 savings and free shipping. That's 1-866-669-9662 or TryZonaNow.com.
Welcome to another edition of Layla Weighs In here on the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Layla Mutin. I am the nutritionist, the registered dietitian at the Hoffman Center. I am here working with Dr. Hoffman since 2005. It's great, great fun. I don't know where all the time is gone, but we continue to do good work. Anyway, thank you for joining me. I've got a question here from Kathy, and it's about kidney stones. It's a topic I wrote about in the newsletter recently. Kathy writes, "Good evening. I appreciate the article about Oxalobacter formigenes, as my husband, who has long-term Crohn's disease, has had several occurrences of kidney stones. I saw several months ago that Dr. Hoffman recommended Dr. O'Hara's professional probiotics. I bought some, but I don't see on the box that the capsules contain Oxalobacter formigenes. Is there any way that you can confirm that for me, that they do contain O formigenes, or direct me to a probiotic that has it? I make SCD yogurt, which is specific carbohydrate diet, yogurt, and I'm trying very hard to help my husband with his condition. I would very much appreciate a response to this question. Thank you, Kathy." Hi, Kathy. So yes, let me talk about this a little bit more. Maybe it was not clear in my article. We are populated. The O formigene, Oxalobacter formigenes, bacteria is colonized in the gut, and this begins in infancy. But only 60 to 80% of adults continue to carry the bacteria. And this could be because of use or overuse of antibiotics, which is something I talk about in this article. So approximately 75% of all kidney stones are calcium oxalate stones. And oxalate is present in a lot of foods like spinach, nuts, berries, beans, oats, chard, watercress, black tea, cocoa. But the propensity of these foods to raise urinary oxalate, it's not just about the oxalate content, but how efficiently it's absorbed. And that has to do with how well the gut is populated with O formigenes or Oxalobacter formigenes. This beneficial bacteria can help to reduce the amount of oxalate absorbed, thereby decreasing the risk of kidney stone formation. So, we know that population of O formigenes in the gut, as well as other probiotic bacteria, could be protective in those prone to kidney stones, like Kathy's husband. Now, the studies that were done, and this is where I want to clarify for Kathy and for others in case it wasn't clear. One study reported an average decrease of 40% in urinary oxalate excretion in 6 subjects with kidney stones after 4 weeks of taking probiotics, while a second study of 11 healthy individuals who also followed a low oxalate diet showed a decrease of 33% in urinary oxalate. Not bad. Now, here's the thing. In these studies, the probiotic formulations these subjects took did not contain Oxalobacter formagenes, they contained formulations that would feed and help to colonize Oxalobacter formagenes in your gut. And these probiotic formulations included, in the Lactobacillus species, Acidophilus, Plantarum, Paracaceae, Bulgaricus. It also contained Bifidobacterium infantis, as well as Longum, and Streptococcus thermophilus. All of these are found in popular yogurts. Kathy, you indeed are growing this in your homemade SCD yogurt. And these are found in popular formulations. Now, the Dr. O'Hara's probiotic has a proprietary blend of Lactobacillus species. It's there in the ingredients. They don't necessarily go into the species directly, but it's a lactic acid species, meaning a Lactobacillus containing species. It could be any of the ones that I just mentioned. Acidophilus, Lactobacillus plantarum, Lactobacillus bulgaricus, all of these. And these probiotic bacteria is what helps us grow Oxalobacter formagenes in our gut. There isn't a probiotic that I am aware of that contains O formagenes in and of itself. It's this other beneficial probiotic bacteria that helps the growth of this in our gut. I hope this is clear. And for any of my colleagues who happen to know, please let me know if you do know of a probiotic formula that contains O-formagenes, or of course, any of you listening out there, not just my colleagues. Send your comments, your questions, any comments at all, to radioprogram@AOL.com. That's radioprogram@AOL.com. And Kathy, keep making that SCD yogurt and get an SCD legal probiotic that will contain primarily Lactobacillus acidophilus, which is very good for the gut of somebody with Crohn's disease. And Claire Labs makes it. You can go to drhoffman.com and click on the store for more details. Very interesting study in Natural Medicine Journal, a journal that I subscribe to, a journal that I love to read. An effective natural treatment for GERD, that's gastroesophageal reflux disease, aloe vera syrup. Guess what? Aloe vera syrup can be very, very, very helpful. And what they did, the study's objective, was to see if aloe vera was efficacious in reducing symptoms of GERD, acid reflux, heartburn, and to compare it with certain drugs like omeprazole, that's your Prilosec, Zegerid, right? As well as, you know, ranitidine, which is Zantac. So they wanted to test and see if aloe vera was effective, or compare it to proton pump inhibitors and histamine 2 receptor agonists. We're talking primarily Prilosec and Zantac, which is primarily what people take when they have GERD. So, participants either received about 10 milliliters of aloe vera syrup per day, and a Prilosec capsule or a Zantac tablet for a period of about 4 weeks. These participants were between the ages of 18 and 65. They were diagnosed with GERD and they were referred for endoscopy. A total of 79 participants were enrolled in the study, and the people that had to be excluded were those who were pregnant, breastfeeding, had other gastrointestinal disorders or liver disease, or had a sensitivity to aloe vera. So what they found was that aloe vera that both groups treated with conventional medicine, the Prilosec, the Zantac, experienced a more significant reduction in the frequency of all assessed GERD symptoms at both assessment intervals when compared to baseline and compared to aloe vera. However, each group in the conventional arm had two patients drop out due to adverse effects, while the aloe vera arm had no dropouts. Now, the results of this study show that aloe vera syrup is a safe, effective, and well-tolerated treatment for common symptoms of GERD. Okay, so there are other studies that support the use of aloe vera in the treatment of GERD. A recent study published in the Journal of the American Medical Association suggests that the pathogenesis of reflux esophagitis may be due to inflammation rather than chemical injury that's caused by an acid stomach. So, anyway, aloe vera have shown positive effects on GERD, including diet and lifestyle modifications. Taking things like Endofen, DGL, Iberogast, melatonin, limonene. But I also want to make you aware, this was an aloe vera gel that was used. Now, when I look at my herbal drug nutrient interaction PDR, the aloe vera gel that's commonly used for a whole lot of other things, for instance, wound healing, ulcerative colitis, burns, psoriasis, even genital herpes, aloe vera gel is used for. There may be some adverse reactions like a contact dermatitis or hives or an allergic response, but generally aloe vera gel is very well tolerated and taken orally. It's very, very, very well tolerated. However, the aloe vera gel is different from the aloe dried juice of the leaf. So, if you're using aloe, make sure it's the gel and not the dried juice of the leaf or the juice of the leaf. Because if it is that, you only want to use it short term. The chronic use of aloe dried juice of the leaf can increase risk of hepatitis, liver disease, and the anthraquinone, which is found in the dried juice or the juice of the leaf of aloe, is a cathartic laxative. So if you are taking this, also aloe, for constipation and you're using the dried juice of the leaf, it is a laxative and you may become dependent. So user, beware. Be sure that you're using aloe vera, the gel, and not something else. Keep that in mind. Other news in the research. Very, very interesting. A longitudinal study from China, from the China Health and Nutrition Survey, which included more than 6,200 Chinese men and women over 50 years old, with mean daily calcium intakes of 415 milligrams and 373 milligrams, respectively, from plant-based diets, found that high calcium intakes were linked to greater fracture risk, while the lowest fracture risks were found in men consuming 275 milligrams to 780 milligrams of calcium daily and women consuming 250 to 650 milligrams of calcium daily. This study, which included 7 years of follow-up, was posted online in May. So, that higher calcium intakes were linked to greater fracture risk, while lowest fracture risks were found in men and women consuming less calcium. Well, this goes to show anybody with osteopenia, osteoporosis, who are told to take calcium in the doses still recommended by doctors, unfortunately, of 1200 milligrams, 1500 milligrams, this is no longer the standard of care. Not in my world here okay, here at the Hoffman Center, we no longer recommend more than, say, 500 to 700 milligrams of calcium daily, which is more in line with this study. Because, first of all, nobody has a deficiency of calcium. Not in this country. So why do they keep throwing calcium at bone loss, at osteopenia and osteoporosis? However, we do see deficiencies in blood tests in magnesium, in vitamin D, in essential fatty acids, maybe in potassium, other electrolytes. So this is what needs to be addressed in terms of bone care. And in addition, we know that a person over 50, man or woman, needs double the protein of somebody who is 20, 25 years old, man or woman. So this is now pretty much regarded as scientific fact. We need to double the RDA for anybody over the age of 50. And your best sources of protein really are animal protein. Yes, we have plant sources of protein too. They're just fine. They just don't compare to animal protein. Keep that in mind. So any excess calcium intake, you want to take a look at the supplements you're taking. If you're taking a bone health supplement, make sure you're not going above, say, 700 and tops 800 milligrams of calcium. But you're probably not just taking a bone health supplement if you're concerned about your bone health. You're probably also taking a multivitamin. Check the amount of calcium there too. And certainly, you're getting some dietary calcium. You're getting your calcium from dairy products, your cheese, your yogurt, your milk, all of those. However, dairy products also have phosphorus, and phosphorus often competes with calcium for metabolism. So dairy is not necessarily the best source of dietary calcium. Other sources of dietary calcium, your dark green leafies, your kale, your collards, right? Broccoli, almonds, soy, maybe another. If you're eating sardines with bones in it, or salmon, canned salmon with bones in it, the bones are quite soft when it's cooked and it's edible and you could mash it all with your fork, that's a terrific source of calcium. And of course, another source of calcium is your homemade chicken stock, bone broths, where you take the carcass, your leftover chicken, the bones, or your leftover beef, the bones, the lamb, the bones, throw all of them in with enough water to cover, add in there some celery, some carrot, some onion, and simmer this for several hours. You've got a beautiful bone broth, a soup stock, soup broth. Strain it all. You've got a beautiful consomme. Don't forget to add your herbs and spices, salt and pepper. And to enhance the leaching of the calcium from the bones in the broth, you could add a teaspoon of some white vinegar, or maybe some apple cider vinegar. You could just do fine with some white vinegar. That can enhance the leaching of the calcium into the broth. So keep this in mind. And I did have an article, it was quite a while ago, that drinking milk may increase fracture risk. I wonder how much of that has to do with the actual lactose, which is the sugar in milk, or anything else. I doubt it would have to do with the protein in milk, which would only be beneficial, and especially the protein in whey, which contain the branched-chain amino acids, leucine, isoleucine, and valine, which are anabolic amino acids, which are helpful in building muscle and helping with bone. And, of course, when we strength train via stressing our muscles and the ligaments that connect to the bone, we're also stressing our bones kind of indirectly and helping to strengthen our bones. Keeping all that in mind for bone health, it's not all about throwing calcium at the issue. Nobody is low in calcium on a blood test. You don't believe me? Check yours. It's in the basic metabolic panel or comprehensive metabolic panel that your doctor will run. 9 cases out of 10, your calcium level will be within normal limits. So taking excess calcium is not actually wise. I want to thank you for joining me in another edition of Layla Weighs In on the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. This is Layla Mutin, RD. I see patients every day here at the Hoffman Center. If you require a nutrition consult with me, but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.